brought to you almost live from the Dude in the Basement Studios. Why? Because that's where the good stuff is. It sips, suds, and smokes with your smoking host, the good old boys.
Suds, suds, suds. It's time for more suds.
It is definitely time for more suds on this episode where everything good in life is worth discussing. I am one of your hosts here at the table, good old boy Mike, and joining me here at the table is good old boy Dave.
Hey, kids.
And good old gal Juliana.
Hiya.
Good old boy Jason.
Howdy, y'all.
And good old boy Shay.
Hey there.
We have definitely a full table to have a great show. Sips, Suds, and Smokes is sponsored by Craft Beer Kings. Craft Beer Kings, the home for all of your beer, wine, and mead needs, home of the Mystery Box. You can get them online, www.craftbeerkings.com. Our Sud segments are all about beer, beer, and definitely more beer. Today's episode is all about laughing at Dave.
Isn't that every episode?
Plus a flight of beers from Wicked Weed Brewery, based in Asheville, North Carolina, the mecca of craft beer on the east coast of the U.S. I am actually going to read our Suds ratings for today. We are going to be tasting and discussing these beers from Wicked Weed and rating them with the Suds ratings plus our signature belching, or signature? Yeah. Toy boat. I need another beer. Our signature belching sounds. These have been sampled from fine North Carolina natives. Here are those ratings now. Number one, that sucks. Give me anything but a bud. Number two, was that a belch?
That sounds like a nice North Carolina girl.
Number three is, what a relief.
That's a nice North Carolina.
That's a Marion. That's a Marion quality.
No, that's her North dad. That's who that is. That's North Carolina's dad. That's what that is. He's going. Him. Yeah, he just lived. Number four, a body should really not make that sound. One of our show favorites. And number five, listen to that hang time and give me another.
I think I dated her once.
Today's show is a brewery takeover episode. Are you sure about that, Dave? Did she say yes when you asked her out? Did you ask her to audition for? Could you tell me how well you belch? You know, it's like, yeah, I'm sorry. You're not worthy.
In certain parts of the country, that's like a mating call. Guy hears that and he's like, oh, she's ready to go out.
All right. Let's see. So today's show is a brewery takeover episode. We'll be talking about beer from one brewery today, and that is going to be Wicked Weed. I absolutely can't wait for this show. This has been planned, for a long time, and this is a brewery that I'm really glad we get to not only talk about the beers, but about the brewery itself. So, we always have lots of cool stuff to sample and review, but I could barely hold off drinking all these beers before the show today. It was very, very tough. I kept on looking at them like, I just have that one. Instead of all those beers, I'm just going to drink that one today. Nah. I was good. I left these alone so we would have all of them for the show. We're going to have a brief overview of Wicked Weed to talk about today, and then we'll discuss the following beers from Wicked Weed. This is a very small sample of what is available through Wicked Weed, so do not think that this is by any means an exhaustive coverage of beer from them. Here are the beers from Wicked Weed. Serenity, Amorous, Genesis, Take-Take, Bredescent, and Dark Arts are the beers that we're going to go through from Wicked Weed today. Juliana has the overview on Wicked Weed, while the rest of us are going to try to trip her up covering this material. D- Dave, that is not a personal invitation for you, okay?
I'm sorry, you've already laid it out. So here we go.
All right.
Yeah, right. Okay, so Wicked Weed is all about making great beer, of course. Two families, the Guthies and the Dickinsons, created Wicked Weed out of their passion for full-flavored beer that at the same time was all the rage on the West Coast. So pretty cool things have happened from early on. Luke and Walt Dickinson are homebrewers that got hooked early on with these styles of beer. Luke met a girl, of course he did, who happened to live in Delaware. They moved to Delaware, go figure, and he ended up getting in with Dogfish Head. Yay! Actually, his first all-grain batch was with Sam Calgione, which is pretty damn cool. And from there, he ended up kind of working his way in, doing some interning at the Dogfish Pub and then running a tour program. At that point, both Luke and Walt had been pretty aggressively brewing for a good while. Walt had gotten to a point where he was excited to do something new, and obviously Luke and Walt had a passion for craft beer. Why do I feel like I should be in Kentucky talking about this or something?
Sorry. Because they don't make high-quality sounds like this. You can't get quality burping like that, you know.
Okay, so we started talking. About, well, you know, what if we opened a brewery? That was their thought.
I'm Enter in the Eighth. I am. I got married to the widow next door. She'd been married seven times before, and everyone was an Ennery.
Ennery!
I wouldn't have a Willie nor a son.
I'm sorry!
I'm a eighth old man, I'm Ennery. Ennery the eighth I am. Second verse.
Second time! Well, that song has something to do with the next part of the story, doesn't it, Juliana?
It does, and thank you for that wonderful interlude. It's a very unique brewery name, and so here's the story behind the name Wicked Weed. The story is that the great Henry VIII proclaimed that hops were wicked, pernicious weeds in the early 1500s, and they weren't to be used in English ale. So, Wicked Weed just felt that was a great kind of inspiration for them as a brewery. I mean, what the hell? It kind of represents what they want to be. It's always great to have a villain, you know, and King Henry is such a great villain.
Very much so.
Yes. So, Jason, I know you've been to the new Funkatorium. I just love that name and the fact that they probably beat out Brandon Jones to the punch on that phrase. So how was it?
Oh, that was outstanding. That was probably one of the highlights of my trip to Asheville recently. We were able to take a tour, which at this point they may be doing that in the future, but they weren't really doing tours of the facility itself. They've got a great old world kind of farmhouse theme tap room there, lots of community tables, great bar area, etc. Quite a few beers on tap, not only their sour and wild and funky beers, but a few of their clean beers, if you want to call them that. That they bring down from the main location, just a few blocks up the road. But currently they've got about 600, a little north of 600 barrels in rotation in the barrel program. They bring down the wort from the main location. They don't ferment or brew at the Funkatorium. They bring all that wort down into some stainless vessels they have on site. They age it out and then they barrel it. And then they actually pump back out of the barrels into stainless to blend and get their blends done, and then go ahead and bottle from there, or keg, obviously, as well. But Mike mentioned that what we have today is just a bare sampling their products. Some of their beers, their sour or lambic style beers that they do, their American sour beers, they're not even bottling those at this point. I tried one there that was their Kiwi Morte, which is a third in the series of their Morte beers, which uses a pound and a half of fresh kiwis per gallon. And then they age this for 8 months in white wine barrels. And they leave the skin.
Ooh, I want.
Yes. They leave the skins on the kiwi to get a depth of character and from that fruit, not just the meat of the fruit, but they also use the skins.
Yeah, it brings like that bitter earthiness, mm-hmm, you know, you get on kiwi fruit, yeah.
It was an outstanding beer. They also, I thought one thing they did was interesting. They have a, I would hesitate to call it a mother, but it is almost that concept. They have something called their Cosette Sour Blonde that is, they have quite a bit of that on hand, and they blend that into a lot of their other beers for the souring component. So if they have a beer that, like one of the ones we have today, is a blend of sour and Brett-based beer, Brettanomyces-based beer, so that they're blending that Cosette Sour Blonde back into some of their other beers for that lambic, if you will, or sour character to get that in the beer. The other thing of note that they had, we were able to sample their Black Angel, which is the first in a series of their Angel series. They're going to do White Angel, Red Angel, and I believe there was another one in there as well. I forget the name of that one, actually. The Black Angel was a cherry sour, a sour black ale with a pound of sweet and tart cherries per barrel, and then aged. All of their beers, they say, are aged anywhere up to a year or more, 8, 10, 12 months in most cases. So it was a really nice facility. One of the gentlemen there, Jesse, was gave us a nice little behind-the-scenes tour, and they just a great feel to the tap room and the pub and the facility itself.
Well, Juliana, Dave, and I were privileged to really spend a firsthand time with Wicked Weed and Abby Dickinson, who is actually the wife of the brewer, at GABF's media luncheon. And the interesting thing about that luncheon is they obviously they serve beer, but the beers that they're serving, it's almost like a prelude to who's going to medal and do well, you know, at the show as well. And so it was really interesting that we actually got to hear Abby talk about the Funkatorium, because it was opening right about that same time last fall.
October 10th of last year, actually.
We actually had two of the beers from them there at the table, and actually we have two of them right here. It was Genesis and Serendipity, right?
Serenity.
I'm sorry. Serendipity, Serenity. It's all kumbaya. You know, hold my hand, Dave.
No.
So it was really good to kind of get, you know, introduced to their beers. But, you know, it was another one of those moments that, you know, I'm not really super keen on always talking about the story of the brewery or, frankly, the brewers, because that's not what you're buying when you go, you know, to the store. It's about what's in the bottle at the end of the day. But I will say that they're in that group of brewers that the passion that they have for what they do, it really comes forward in a lot of their products. And I enjoyed hearing from Abby, you know, firsthand. And she wasn't selling it. I mean, you know, there's some people you can tell when they're trying to sell it. There's just a natural passion, you know, that she has for what she and her husband are doing. And I'm sure it still feels like work, but it didn't look like work, you know, when she was there. So,
yeah, Jesse, who led the tour that I took there at the Funkatorium, was much the same way. He was interested in us getting the opportunity to try this stuff. He wasn't trying to sell us on the idea of Wicked Weed or the Funkatorium or anything of that nature. He was excited that we were there to get a chance to try this stuff that they loved creating.
Well, we have a little bit of extra time here, and one of the other topics that I wanted to cover was Shay and I were talking before the episode, and he asked me, he said, "Well, so where did you get the Wicked Weed?" And it was like six different stories, you know, it took to assemble, you know, these beers, because their distribution is really tight, isn't it, Shay?
It's very tight. They like to stay where they can control most of it. It's very hands-on. They don't like to expand outside their comfort zone, and it's very, very localized. They don't really expand farther than what they need to.
Well, the other thing that catches me is that they distribute most of their bombers in 500 milliliters and not in traditional 750s. And I had this long conversation with another brewer, and that's fairly in, you know, close proximity, and, you know, my basic conversation, you know, about that was, I don't get that. It doesn't make any sense to me, especially for the retailer, because the retailer wants to maximize the amount of revenue that they have for the shelf space, and shelf space is at a premium. Well, the thing is if you're dropping a 500 milliliter bottle as opposed to a 750, then the thing is I'm not going to make as much profit for the same square footage that I have, you know, in that retail space. I mean, do you know other brewers that are really going to commit to doing that type of yield management?
Well, 750s traditionally don't do well in retail environments. Contrary to popular belief, it's the 12-ounce that rules the shelf.
Huh.
750s traditionally, especially in Tennessee.
Not for Dave or me.
Yeah. especially right. In Tennessee, 750s don't do very well at all. When you go to sign somebody, there are several breweries that only do 750s in keg. Out of St. Louis, Second Shift Brewery. They do only large format. Mm-hmm. So in a market like this, 750s don't do well at all. So as for like a strategy for somebody like that brand, somebody who only does 750s, your strategy's got to be draft first, then package. You get somebody one in it, had it down here, had it down there, and then you slowly introduce package, because if you introduce package first, it's 750 milliliters. It's a commitment. It's a, hey, I have 750 milliliters of beer that I have to finish.
Yeah.
That's almost three glasses of beer. Where you and, I mean, it's not much for me, but as the
that's
average.
That's a good start.
Right. But the average beer aficionado nowadays wants the newest and greatest thing. They don't want to sit down with 750 milliliters and have to finish it and still be, you know, committed to that. They can finish the 500 mils or 375s and go on to something else.
So, you know, I happened to notice that I left the price tag on several of these bottles, because I actually bought most of these are traded, you know, to get them here. Any reaction to the price point for a 500 milliliter and that you guys, did you think it was, I mean, you're tasting
spot
the beer
on.
Now.
It's spot on for what it is. Yeah. I mean, you have to consider what you're consuming. I mean, you know, on the average nowadays, anything from 22 ounces will run anywhere from $9.99 to upwards to $18.99, $22.99, of that nature. So, I mean, you're talking about $8.99, $14.99 for a 500 milliliter from somebody who produces a very, very, very small amount.
Mm.
So, I mean, it's good for what it is, and it's good pricing.
I haven't heard anything about any production increase out of Wicked Weed. After they constructed the Funkatorium, I think that was, you know, that was like their next big move. And that was really more of an expansion of fermentation space than really brewing capacity. Have you guys heard anything about them changing either contract brewing or, God forbid, I don't think they would ever do that, but anyway, have you heard them expanding at all? And with so many big breweries now in their backyard, you know, I got to believe that they're kind of walking through, especially Mills Creek, and going, ooh, man, I like this.
Well, they mentioned that briefly when I was there, not in terms of wort production, but in terms of, and they did mention the room that they had for increased barrel count in the Funkatorium. So they do have plans to slightly expand the current capacity of the Funkatorium. In other words, they've got room for more barrel racks. Mm. They did recently add another stainless tank in the Funkatorium to hold and blend. But they are they did not mention any increase in production targets. One thing I was kind of interested in, or that stood out to me, was the wide variety of barrels they had. They were doing, and it's present in what we are sampling today. They had white wine barrels, red wine barrels. They had, I believe it was rum, and I believe there was a sherry or port, I can't remember, as well, barrels. There were bourbon barrels present. So they're trying, you know, quite a big variety of barrels in the program as well. But I didn't hear a lot of expansion beyond increasing the number of barrels at the Funkatorium.
Well, that's it. We're going to wrap this episode. I'm leaving now. Well, we are going to take a quick break here, and we'll be right back. We're going to start talking about some of our beers that we have from Wicked Weed right after this break. Welcome back to Sips, Suds, and Smokes. I am your host, good old boy Mike. This is a brewery takeover edition on Wicked Weed. We have several beers that we're going to be talking about from Wicked Weed today. If you lost track of the list from earlier, let me go through it, the whole list one quick time with you. It's Serenity, Amorous, Genesis, Take-Take, Bredesen, and Dark Arts are the beers we're going to go through from Wicked Weed. So what we've done is we've had a chance to taste all these beers, and what we've done first is we have come up with our top three, and we are going to go around, talk about our tasting notes around the top three, and then we're going to go around and talk around one more beer from each of us as well. So you will probably hear about all these beers at some point in time today. So up first, our let's see, you want to go 3-1 or... Or 1-3. Any choices?
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Dave says, get to the point where we start drinking beer.
Let's just do this. Let's get going.
I tell you what. Let's go from 3-1. How's that? All right. So our number three pick is going to be Genesis. So let me introduce this beer to everybody. Genesis Blonde Sour is has an ABV of 5.6%. Here is the description from the brewery as well. This ale is a 5% ABV in our first venture into barrel and American wild ales. A blonde saison base similar to that of a saison, a blonde saison. Similar to that of Saison. It's kind of like redundant. Anyway, I didn't write this. Let's see. It's fermented in our proprietary Wicked Weed strain. After fermentation, we move the beer into Petit Verdot barrels. I like the sound of that. From Rockhouse Vineyards, and added mango, papaya, and guava where it sat for 6 months. This ale is tart with tropical notes, musty hay, and citrus. The tartness of this sour is moderate, and the dry fruitiness makes this beer a great palate cleanser and pairs well with delicate dishes. Let's see, it is actually 250-pound batches of papaya, mango, and pineapple guava in each of the barrels for 5 to 12 months. So that's a lot of fruit, man.
Yeah, it's somewhere north of 20 pounds per barrel.
Wow.
Of fruit.
Nice.
So, Shay, what do you think about this beer and your suds rating?
It's a nice, it's a good dry sour. Citrus, it's good domestic sour. Would I put it against some of the other sours in its category? Probably not. I mean, I love Wicked Weed's sours, but a lot of times when they get into the production, like he says, they all have a very similar characteristic. You can taste the fruit. The passion fruit is the first thing you get on most of their saisons. So for me, this is a good dry sour, huge citrus notes to it. I like it. I put it at 3.
A 3. What a relief. Good old boy Jason, what do you think about Genesis Blonde Sour?
I really enjoyed it. I got, in addition to the tropical notes that are, they're very obvious. I mean, you just can't get around the tropical fruit in the nose and the taste. I also got a little bit of peach out of the nose as well. I didn't consider it terribly sour. I could definitely feel and taste the white wine character coming through from the barrel. Just solid all-around beer, moderate sourness. Moderate funkiness from the Brett. I gave it a 4.
Four? How about that? Body should not make that sound. Juliana, what did you think about Genesis here?
I liked it. Although I have to admit that it wasn't as sour as I was hoping it would be. you know, for what the label claimed it to be. But, and there was a hint of sweetness in there. I got quite a bit of fruit into it, and very crisp, very, very crisp. Overall, a good beer, and I gave it a 3.
3. What a relief. Dave, what do you think about Genesis Blonde Sour?
Well, you know, Mike, they say gentlemen prefer blondes, and I'm nothing if not a gentleman. I've known many blondes.
Yeah, some. Really.
I'm sorry. That was so obvious.
I'm sorry. I thought this was...
It's like walking into the buzzer.
I thought this was Dave time. Anyways, so I've had a lot of blondes. Some were sour, some weren't. But that's another story for another show. So this one, I'm like everybody else. I got a lot of fruit. I really enjoyed the Christmas that I think the wine barrels brought. And I felt like there were, it finished with like a very nice little bite to it. So they kind of lingered on my palate. I gave it a 4.
A 4? A body should not make that sound. Well, my tasting notes on Genesis Blonde Sour, I wrote down two words, sour lemon wedge. you know, I think that if you had taken a lemon wedge and dipped it in white wine and then stuck it in your mouth, it'd be this beer. You know, it's just, I think for me, it was just a little too one-dimensional. You know, after reading through that description, which I didn't read the description before I tried the beer, I find it hard to believe that there's that much sweet fruit in it. I would have thought that the combination of the mango and papaya would be more pronounced, and I would have thought it would have been even sweeter, you know, than it's presenting itself. So, anyway, I just thought it was great beer. My Suds rating for Genesis Blonde is a 3. What a relief. And so that is our first beer. All right. next beer is going to be our number 2 pick, and it is going to be Amorous is going to be that beer. So let me find that sheet. Hang on a second. Vamp, make a joke while I find this page. Here we are. The full name of this beer is Wicked Weed Royal Cash, or is it Cache? Is it Cache or Cache? I'm going to go with Cache. Cache. Amorous.
We're in North Carolina. It's Cache.
Right, here you go. Royale.
Royale with cheese.
Royale with cheese. That's what it is. Let's see. The classification is sour wild yeast, wild ale, I'm sorry. The ABV on this is 6.9%, and here's the description from Wicked Weed. Amorous is defined as being in love and enamored, but no one can doubt that Wicked Weed is in love with sour and hoppy ales. This bottle is a blend of both Brett and sour barrels, dry hopped with a bouquet of American hops to accentuate the tropical and citrusy profile of each base beer. Noel is more Wicked Weed than Amorous. So that is our number 2 pick once again. Shay, what do you think about this beer?
Of the dry hop sours that I've had, it's, you know, it's no Cantillon Iris, but if you were to make Cantillon Iris in the U.S. of a dry hop sour, this would be probably about as close as you can get. It's funky, horsehair, horse blanket, dry hop, tropical fruit. I give this, it's plenty of carb to it. I mean, there's plenty of carb. I give it a 3.
3. What a relief. Good old boy Jason, what'd you think about Amorous?
Well, I really enjoyed the American hop, the citrus hop blend into this beer. I thought the sourness was a little on the low side for me. I didn't quite get as much sourness as I would have liked. I think maybe the Brett a little overpowered the sour character of the beer, but again, that both in aroma and flavor, that's American citrus hop, the big sea hop flavor and aroma came through strong. I enjoyed it. It was something I haven't really had much else with that kind of character in it. I gave it a 4 for my Suds rating.
About that, a body should really not make that sound. Juliana, what'd you think about Amorous?
I love this beer. This is like barnyard happiness to me. It's grassy, it's citrusy, it's got that perfect degree of sourness. It just was great. Yeah, exactly. I can't stop drinking it, damn it. I give this a 4.
A 4. A buddy should really not make that sound. Dave, what do you think about Amorous here?
Well, Mike,
Do tell, Dave.
It's, to me, this was the right blend of funky, sour, citrusy. It was just a very drinkable beer, and as it warmed up while we were waiting to talk about it, I think that that it really came out a lot more. A lot of the characteristics really came out a lot more. So I really enjoyed it, and I gave it a 4.
A 4. A body should really not make that sound. My tasting notes here on Royal Cash Amorous are very simple. It is sour with citrus. And I'm rating it a 3. How about that? In and out of that one fast. All right. So we're first. We're through our first two beers. We're down to our number one pick. And of course, you know, there's always somebody that has to have something in this.
I gotta have more cowbells, baby. Guess what? I got a fever. And the only prescription is more cowbells.
That's a North Carolina cowbell. All right, our number one pick is going to be Dark Arts. How about that?
Yay.
So, there's a story that goes behind Dark Arts here, and so this particular beer is a very limited release. It's allocated. You have to get in a raffle, and you know there's a lot of pieces, you know, to the pie in order to get this. And the only reason why I have this bottle to talk about is because I ended up trading a similar beer that was allocated to trade that beer to finally get the Dark Art. So it was like a three-way trade to, you know, finally get to this. So what I'm looking for this sheet. It
sounds like the NBA kind of.
I don't know, man. I got traded. I don't know what I'm doing here. So Dark Arts is also classified as a sour wild ale. I have no idea why, because it is definitely a stout for sure. It's definitely deep and sticky. It is, that's interesting. It is definitely not a sour wild ale. It's an imperial stout. The ABV on this is, any guesses? Well, you guys all have a sheet with me, but if you had guessed, would you have guessed that it would have been that high?
No, not at all.
15%.
No, it ABV. It doesn't taste that big.
Yeah, it's definitely hidden in it. It's a very simple description. It's a bourbon barrel aged imperial stout. Again, this is an allocated beer. It comes out every November. Does that sound right? About right? Somewhere in that neighborhood. So, there are a lot of imperial stouts that kind of hit that holiday, you know, period as well. So, great beer. Shay, what do you think about Dark Arts?
It was great. It had a really good coffee nose to it. Deep, rich flavor. I didn't think it was 15% at all. I wouldn't guess that. You know, you have guys that are like, Goose Island's Bourbon County's 13.8. And it's nowhere, it's a lot thicker and viscous than this.
Yeah.
A lot more higher sugar. But I can see where you get the wild sour, because there is a tinge of wildness to it. And I typically do not like dark wild sours. Mm. I'm not a fan. Like Tart of Darkness, they pull it off okay out of the brewery. Mm. But, you know, there are a few others that do a good job, but it's few and far between that you see somebody who actually makes a good dark sour. Mm. On the ratings, I gave this one a 4.
A 4. A body should really not make that sound. Good old boy Jason, what do you think about Dark Arts?
Yeah, very enjoyable beer. I got a touch of vanilla, a little chocolate, some deep plum or maybe some other stone fruit type aromas on the nose. If I had to knock it on any one thing, I would say there was a slight harshness the very back of the palate. That may be where some of the sour, the wild funkiness comes in, but it passed quickly. That was my only one small knock on the beer. Again, I got some of that vanilla, that currant, plum, that dark fruit in the flavor. Just a all around good beer, like everybody said so far, hides that ABV well. It's smooth and much better than you would much smoother than you would think at that level, that ABV. Yeah. I gave this one a Suds rating of 4.
4. Body should not make that sound. Good old gal Juliana. What'd you think of Dark Arts?
I love this beer. I mean, for those of you that have heard me before, I'm a big fan of stouts. I brew stouts. I love stouts. I am a stouty girl anyways. But what was really nice about this is that there's just that hint of sourness. You know, because it's hard to pull off. If you're going to add sourness to something like an Imperial Stout, there's that fine line between maintaining the stout flavor and the dark fruit flavor, and then it getting overpowered by that tart. So this was a really nice blend, because I'm still able to get the dark fruits. I'm getting that the vanilla bourbon-y kind of taste too, with just that slight hint of tartness. It was great. I gave it a 4.
A body should not make that sound. Dave, what do you think about Dark Arts?
Well, I think you coined a pretty good phrase earlier, deep and sticky, I think, which sounds filthy, but actually is fairly applicable.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Strippers unite.
Sorry, I'd do that just for Shay.
Stripper anthem.
He'd been waiting on that.
I was looking for the perfect excuse.
I think we were all waiting. Yeah. I think everything that the previous folks have said rings pretty true. I think the barrel aging on this really did some nice work to it to soften it. And it does not taste nearly as big as it is. So I gave this beer a 4.
A 4? A body should really not make that sound. Again, this was our number one pick out of the flight that we have here. My tasting notes on Dark Arts are, I thought it was very bourbon forward. One of the conversations we have about barrel-aged beer, especially things that are bourbon or rum or whatever, is the bourbon, you know, complementing the beer, is beer complementing the bourbon, you know, in this very delicate balance, you know. And I thought it was a bit off kilter here. I thought the bourbon was a bit too forward with this. It was the first thing I noticed on the nose, and it was the first thing I noticed when I tasted it. So, very interesting comparison, you know, with Bourbon County, because I have to say, this is a it's a pretty good clone of, some of the Bourbon County beers, for sure. I don't have the same allocation issues, that you do with this. So, the other tasting notes that I had around this are it was deep, roasty cocoa nibs, and the one thing that you said, Jason, I really when I went back and tasted it, I'm like, yep, that's definitely plum. You're right, it is. There's a dark fruit overtone to this as well, and definitely plum, I think, is probably the dead-on fruit, you know, for this. The one thing I wrote down here is I just don't think it's worth it. You know, with this being allocated and all the how tough it is to get this, especially after you said it, Shay, that how close this is to, you know, the Bourbon County line, I'd say it, but, you know, it's just it'd be very tough for me to go back and chase after this again. But my Suds rating for this for Dark Arts is also a 4, so it's a really good beer. Just a little tough for me to say, wow, of all the steps and, you know, chess moves I had to make to get this, I don't know if I'm ready up for that again. So,
see, I think this one would actually last a lot longer than Bourbon County.
Yeah.
And probably develop a whole lot nicer than Bourbon County could ever hope to be.
Yeah.
but is it worth the headache? I mean, it's worth it to whoever wants it.
Yeah.
If you want it bad enough, you'll go get it. If you don't want it bad enough, you don't have to go get it. So, it's all depending on what you want.
Yeah, I agree. Well, that covers our top three out of this flight. So we are going to take another break here, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to each talk about another beer out of this flight that we enjoyed. So we'll be right back. Hello and welcome back to Sips, Suds, and Smokes. I'm Good Old Boy Mike. We are talking about a Suds show today, and it's a brewery takeover edition on Wicked Weed out of Asheville, North Carolina. We have a flight of beers from Wicked Weed that we're going through today. We have gone through our top three, and now we're going to spend a moment and go around and each talk about one beer that were not in the top three. So up first is going to be Good Old Boy Shay.
The one that I thought was in a really, really nice representation of, you know, a great use of Brett was the Serenity. They did a great job of using the Brett, even though it was a short finish to it, a very dry, dry, dry beer. Huge passion fruit, huge barnyard notes with the Brett coming through. You know, overall, I thought this one right here was, I mean, it's a great, stable wild ale. It's not necessarily a all-around sour beer, but I would, you know, if I was going to do a wild farmhouse, this would be it. I gave this one a 3.
A 3. What a relief. Also, a really good beer, and definitely something that was really caught my attention on several times. I mean, I remember when we tasted this in Denver. I've had several bottles of it since then. And even tonight. The one thing that caught me with this is there were a few of these that were carved up, and this was one that was, you know, pretty carved up. But it was good. It was still very light on the tongue. So, good old boy Jason, what beer do you want to talk about?
I was going to talk about actually my least favorite of the flight today, and that was the Wicked Weed Terra Locale Take. This one, actually, this was a gusher for us when we opened this one up today. And I'll give you the description on this one. Take is a New Zealand hopped Brettanomyces Saison made with local Riverbend malt, Riverbend malt house malt, and our house Brett strain. And my notes on this, I've had some really good New Zealand hopped beers. In fact, I've made a pale ale with New Zealand hops, and turned out wonderful.
Well, it is the it hop right now.
So. It is, but this one, Nelson Savon, I think is what I'm picking up here, and it is it's a hop that can get out of hand quickly if you're not careful with it. And in this beer, that New Zealand hop character, that Nelson Savon, was just a little bit too much for me. It didn't quite blend as well as I would like with the malt and with the Saison yeast, the Brett yeast that they used in this beer. I did, however, the one saving grace for me in this beer was the malt character. I did like the malt character in this beer. I thought it stood out just a little bit more than a few of the other examples. I could still taste a little, almost like biscuity character in the malt. So on this one, I was struggling. I wanted to give it a 2, but it's really better than that, so I'm going to give it a 3.
Oh, okay. What a relief. So, you know, the question I have for you is, do you think that the American palate has become homogenized, or I would say almost, homogenized to the point where we're really focused on, you know, like those five big, you know, hop varieties that are present, you know, here in the States? Because these New Zealand hops definitely are vastly different than what we have seen traditionally, you know, in a lot of beers. I remember the first time I had something that was really, you know, had the New Zealand hops all over it was, I want to say it was Schaffley. They were really playing around with it. Mm-hmm. And,
it's Tasmanian hop. Is that the Tasmanian you
had? Yeah, that's it, yeah. And I remember walking away from that tasting going, I'm not really quite sure whether I like it. It's so vastly different.
I don't know. I think with American hopheads, that may be the case. Me personally, I have lost a lot of my taste for hops in the bigger hop beers. In fact, I cannot handle drinking too many large IPAs or even Imperial IPAs these days. Something about the hop character just doesn't sit well with me anymore. So I've become a little bit more of a malt head these days. Mm. So I think in terms of hop heads, yes, the American palate may be a little, focused on the Citra, the Centennial, the Cascade, the Sea Hops, if you will. The English, the German hops are vastly different. The New Zealand hops are vastly different. I prefer a lot of the milder, gentler, continental European hops over the big American hops. Mm. Although I'm still, I still love Citra. Mm. It's hard for me to turn down a Citra beer.
Well, I think if they Beechwood aged New Zealand hops. Wow. Anyway, I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Juliana, what beer did you want to talk about?
I think the last in the series of what we had today is the Bredesen,
mm-hmm.
which the description says, this traditional saison is brewed using North Carolina grown barley, wheat, and rye from Riverbend Malt House, and is open fermented. The beer is unfinished with Brett and bottled. I wanted to like this, but I just kept having some weird flavor issues with it. It's light and it's funky, and I got this weird spicy tangerine-y thing going on, which I just thought was a little odd. I struggled with the number, but I eventually came up with the 3 because it's a light flavor, I guess.
Mm.
I don't know. I just wasn't wowed.
Very interesting. I have like a total, I wrote down, this is the perfect Brett. I just love this beer. I've had it a lot. I probably have easily had 15 bottles of this. And it's just something I love going back to. Maybe a little one-dimensional, but there's just something about the consistency of this beer that I really love. It's very quaffable. I love going back to it. So
it is dry and crisp, enjoyable. Is. I think that spiciness you mentioned.
I love the citrus balance. Yeah.
Yeah, that might be that rye. And in a lot of ways, you either love rye or you hate rye. I tend to fall into not the hate, but I'm not a huge rye fan. And the spiciness that comes from rye usually does not sit well with me and my palate.
Hmm. Well, cool. Dave, what beer did you want to talk about?
They already talked about them all, but...
That's all right.
All right. I'll just say about the...
You and I get Fielder's Choice.
Okay, cool. Then I'd like to talk about the new offering from InBev. I believe it's called Bud Platinum. Okay, no. I will just say about the Bredesen that when it was cold and we first tried it, I thought it was a good saison. I didn't think it was outstanding in any way. And there was sort of an off flavor that I was picking up, and it may have been the way the rye was playing in. But while we were talking about all the other beers and it had a chance to warm up, I do think it developed sort of a sweetness for me that it made it maybe not better, but definitely interesting. I think some of the pepperiness of the rye and everything kind of backed off a little bit, and it actually became very, very enjoyable. Overall, I gave it a 3.
A 3. Ah, what a relief. Well, I think the one beer I want to come back and talk about is Serenity. I wrote down this was dry. I love the lemon, citrus element around it. It was very light. It had a very heavy carb to it. This is one of the, there were like two or three beers that I thought